Welcome to Salty Much this week. I'm Sam.
I'm Sonia.
And let's start with what we're salty about. Would you like to go first, Sonia?
Sure. I don't know if I was just imagining things or what, but I couldn't sleep a couple nights ago because I was convinced there was a mouse in my light. I have like one of those like little dome-shaped lights, and I could have sworn that I heard like little, like, I don't know, noises coming out of it. And it was like the middle of the night, and I was like, oh my gosh, is there a mouse stuck in there, like eating something? And then the noise stopped, and then I fell asleep, and the next day I didn't hear anything. So if there is a mouse up there, I won't be happy about it, but I also just don't know. And it was really like bugging me.
Oh my gosh. Well, this week I am salty about, this is a continuation of what I was salty about last week. So I went to the doctor this morning, for my shoulder, and I saw like the nurse and then the physician's assistant and then the actual surgeon. And I got x-rays done, and, the PA did like a physical exam and like had me do like lifting my arm up and like doing like strength tests and stuff, and asked me about like where all the pain was and all of that jazz. And so he was like, your strength seems fine. Like, it doesn't seem like from what you're telling me that like any of your nerves are damaged or anything like that. And he was like, so that's good. And I was like, okay. And he had me do like lift my arms like vertical, which like I can lift my arms vertical. What I can't do is lift my right arm like out to the side. And he was like, can you do this? And I was like, ha ha, no. And he was like, oh, okay. And he was like, don't worry, I'm not going to torture you too much. And then he like takes my arm and just starts moving it in like weird ways. And I'm just like, oh my God. He was like, he like took my arm and like lifted it up and like back like this. And he was like, does this make you nervous? And I was like, yes, makes me nervous. He's like, okay, well, I'll just put it down then. And he was like, I guess he was trying to like see my range of motion and like what, like how far I could go without it like popping out of my socket again. But I was just like, okay. And then he like went and looked at the x-rays with the surgeon, and the surgeon came in and told me, he was like, so you've dislocated your shoulder 3 times. Is that right? And I was like, yes, that is correct. And he said, so it's happened over the course of the last 5 years. And I was like, yes, that is correct. He's like, okay, so what most likely happened is that in the first time that you dislocated your shoulder, he was like, it wasn't like a skiing accident or like a car accident or anything where this happened. I was like, no, I was the first time it happened, I was playing tennis. I did a backhand in my right shoulder as I was doing a backhand, literally just like fell out of my socket. And then I screamed because I was in pain, and I grabbed it and it like popped back in. And then it happened once when we were on vacation. My family and I, we were all in a pool at some hotel, and we were like playing ball, and we were like throwing the ball to each other, and I like took the ball and I threw the ball. My arm came out of its socket. And then this time I was literally doing crunches and it came out again. And he said, he was like, so the chance of you dislocating your shoulder again, it's between like 75 to 90% chance, I would say. And I was like, oh my God, like I don't want to dislocate my shoulder again. It's not fun. It's painful. And it like, it's, oh my God, it's not fun. And so he was like, so what usually happens, would probably happen the first time that you dislocated your shoulder, was the ball part of the ball and socket joint popped out of where the socket is. And so if you like take your fist and you put your other hand over your fist, that's kind of what like the ball socket joint looks like. And to be able to get the ball out of the socket, something has to give. So he said probably the tissue, it's kind of like cartilage, like that keeps your shoulder in place, the ball part of your ball and socket joint in place, probably tore the first time that I dislocated it. And every time that I've dislocated it since, the tear has gotten bigger. He was like, so the first time it would make sense to do physical therapy. And if you like kept up that physical therapy your entire life, you might not have another dislocated shoulder. But within the next year, you dislocated your shoulder again. And I was like, yeah. And I didn't continue my physical therapy when I went to college because like, I just didn't. And college is a lot. So I just didn't continue it. And he was like, no, that totally makes sense. Like hardly anyone actually continues their physical therapy in college. He was like, so you're going to need surgery. And I was like, okay. He's like, I would not recommend doing PT again just because it's not going to do anything. And I was like, okay, amazing. So he said he wants to schedule an MRI to take a look at my shoulder for like a pre-surgical like exam thing so he can plan what he's going to do in surgery. So I have an MRI scheduled, not next week, but the week after that. And then 2 days after that, I have an exam again with the doctor to go over the MRI to like actually possibly schedule the surgery. So I got that news this morning. So that was really fun.
Oh gosh, I've never done surgery. Like the most like surgery thing I've done, which isn't even surgery, is like my wisdom tooth. Mm-hmm. So I.
Yeah, I mean, I've had like other than wisdom teeth, I've gone under general anesthesia before. I had when I was a child, like a young child, I had an extra tooth that was gonna come up like out between like my two front teeth and my like top jaw, and just like come straight out. And so they had to remove it. So I had surgery for that. And then I had my adenoids removed. I had an adenoidectomy, I think is what it's called, when I was young. And so that's fun. But, like, I've never had surgery, like, on any other major body part.
Yeah, like, I've never broken an arm or anything. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of scared of the idea of surgery because I'm very careful. Like, I'm always like, I don't know. I don't want to fall. I don't want to like, I don't know. I'm really careful all the time because I'm scared of like surgery. I'm scared of getting hurt.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Good luck.
Thank you.
I'm sure it'll go fine.
He said he made it sound like really nonchalant. He's like, we do this all the time. This is one of the most common surgeries that we do. And I was like, okay. And he had me do like a couple, like he like the, both the PA and the surgeon like took my arm and they like extended my arm and they like, it looked like they were like trying to pop my elbow up. Cause I guess they're trying to see how like flexible my joints are because like some people have like hypermobility and stuff that like, increases the likelihood of dislocations. And so he like the other thing he had me do is stick my hand like horizontal with my forearm and take my thumb and see if my thumb could touch my forearm. And he was like, normal people can only go to like there, and I can go like almost all the way back to my forearm.
I want to see like, yeah, I can't,
like, you can't go that far, but like I can go really far. Like, I'm, like, touching my forearm. He was like, so you're pretty – he's like, so you have, like, a little bit of, like, hypermobility. And I was like, okay. And he was like, so that probably plays a part, but it – watching you try to do this right now.
I'm, like, determined to touch my forearm. But I can't.
He was like, that probably plays a part in – the fact that you've dislocated it, but it is not most likely the cause of it. And I was like, okay, great. So I am gonna have to have surgery on my shoulder. And the worst part is that, like, this is coming at like the worst part in my undergrad career to have it.
Yeah, because don't you have
Because what?
classes for like the first time in a while?
And I start classes next week. I have to take a day of classes off to go get my MRI. If I have surgery, I'll have to like take a day off of class, and I have to go. I like was talking with the physician's assistant, and I was saying, I am doing a study abroad program, and like obviously I'm doing the spring semester classes online, from home, but I'm going back to Boston in April because I need to do there's to be able to dive in the abroad locations where we're going to. I need to be a scientific diver, and there's like a special certification that you have to get to become a scientific diver. So that's what the course that we're doing in April. So I have to be able to dive in April. And the physician's assistant was like, okay, well, that's not like throwing a baseball bat, right? And I was like, or throwing a baseball or anything like that, right? And I was like, no, it's like I have to put on a big vest and like carry a tank of air on my back and like swim. But like, I don't use my arm. When you go scuba diving, one of the first things you're taught for scuba diving is never use your arms because you're not supposed to touch anything. Because like anything that you can touch in the ocean, first of all, could poison you and kill you, could kill whatever you touch. And like, you're not supposed to take it, could be endangered, and then you could be like prosecuted and put in jail if you touch something that's endangered. So you don't touch anything. Typically when you dive, you like cross your arms in front of you, or like what I do is I stick my hands behind my back, like underneath my air tank, and I just like sit there like this. So like I'm really hoping it's not going to be a problem, but one of the things you need to be a scientific diver is you have to do a rescue part. So you have to like take a person out of the water. You have to like if your dive buddy is unconscious, you have to be able to take them from the underwater up to the surface, over to the beach, and like get them help. And so like I could do that with my left arm, but like physically, like I don't know if I'm gonna be able to do that if I have surgery on my shoulder like in February.
Right.
So that's like my only concern. And I brought that up to the PA, and he was like, "You should be fine." And I was like, "Okay." But I'm gonna bring it up again to the sur when I see the surgeon. Because the surgeon was just like, "Yeah, you need to get an MRI, and then we'll see you again, and you're gonna have to have surgery." But he said I would be like 100% by September, which is when I'm doing like the actual abroad part, which is what I need. But I also need to be okay to dive, even if not like 100%. I need to be like okay to dive in April. So I have to talk to him about that too. But
Yeah.
it's a long story. That's why my morning was just a little stressful. So,
Yeah, it sounds like it. But I'm sure your surgery will go fine.
I hope so.
So should we talk about motivation?
Yeah, let's get to the main meat of this episode.
Made me.
The main meat. Motivation and what was the
I
thing
guess
that I wrote
maintaining
down?
productivity, working from home and just,
Yeah. Look at you go, stealing the words right out of my notebook. The first thing that I do to stay motivated when I work anywhere, is I have a planner. I live and breathe, all of my friends know, I live and breathe by my planner. And I color code everything in my planner, and that is planning ahead. Especially with school and doing online classes, it can be really hard to stay on top of everything. And so what I always do is as soon as I get the each syllabus for each class, is I go into my planner And the syllabus gives you the general outline of like what days of the week you'll be having class, when the big projects are due, all of that stuff. And I write it all down in my planner so I don't have to think about it later. And then it's all there. And obviously, if something changes, you can cross it out and rewrite it. But like that definitely helps me the most with keeping on track of all of the assignments and what classes I have to do and all of that stuff.
Yeah, I actually just went through like one of my syllabi today, and I did that. I put like everything in my planner, which in the past I always used to get a planner and I would be super motivated at the very beginning of the semester, and then I'd be like, "Oh, never mind. Everything's on Canvas anyways." But now that I'm starting like grad school level courses, I really want to do well in them, and I'm only taking two. So I was like, this is a good time to like get in the habit of writing everything down and actually using the planner. Because I feel like towards the end of the semester, I don't even use my planner anymore. So I wrote everything down like from like the one syllabus that I had access to. And I already bought my textbooks and I already started my homework because
Oh my God.
it's just like a couple of readings. And I was like, might as well start it early because when school actually starts, we're gonna have like assignments to do. So if I do the readings ahead of time, then I can focus on the assignments. So something else that also has been helping me is like having like a space outside of like my bedroom to do homework in and like do Zoom classes in and stuff. Because it's first of all, it's really hard for me to be motivated with online school, and it was an adjustment to be, to like have to do online classes. So like I was able to kind of get in the mindset of like this is class time and like this is like not class time. So I use like one of the guest rooms that we have and I put like a desk in there and I like do all my classes in there and stuff, and that really helps because then when I go in there I feel like doing school stuff. But then in my room, I feel like watching Netflix. So that really helps.
Yeah, I on that same subject, I just got a desk. So like I've been saying, I'm doing my online cl I'm doing classes online in the spring from home. And like my home back home in Minnesota, where I'm from, I have like my own desk in my bedroom, that I've had since I was a very youngin' child. But here in Arizona, I don't have a desk, and so I had to buy a desk, and it's really cute, actually. I'll send you pictures later, Sonia. It's really cute. But I put my desk together yesterday, one-handed, by myself. I'm very proud of myself for doing that all by myself.
I was gonna ask how you did that.
It was a lot of like, it was the nice part was that you could all do it on the ground. So like I would like put my elbow, my like right elbow on the like piece of like fake wood, and then I would like take my left hand and like screw. I can like do some things with my right arm, so like it wasn't like terrible, but like I can't like lift things and like grip things. So it was fine. I did great with it, actually. It was fine. And now I'm like finally organizing it, and I have a cute little cup. I'll show you my cup with all my pens in it.
Ooh.
And I'm like organizing all of my folders and my notebooks and stuff for all my classes. I just got my first email this morning from my
Isn't that
professor.
so satisfying to like get your first email and like
It was
that I was in the
my
same boat
it
yesterday.
was my oh my gosh, let me look up the name of the class. I think it's experimental design in marine ecology. Yeah.
That sounds fun.
It's coding. We're doing
Oh.
R. So it's like
Oh, I have
basically
to do that too, but not now, like later.
I took in last spring I took a biostatistics course where the entire lab was just teaching us R Studio and how to code. So like I took that class, but then I took that class for the purpose of the class that I'm about to take now. where basically we use the skills that we learned in that biostatistics course and put it into terms of how to make an experiment as like a marine biologist. So like how to take like actual real data and like, or take an idea of what you want your experiment to be and then like turn that into like an actual experiment that you're going to do in the field, and then turning, like taking that data and then turning that data into like your results and your discussion graphs and the things that like all everybody sees in all of those scientific papers. So like the basically the course is teaching you from start to finish how to do a real experiment, how to run a lab, basically.
Got it. I had to learn R Studio when I took it was like a calculus class and they mixed R Studio with it. I thought it was really hard. But I have to like know R Studio and I also have to know Python for the program I'm doing. But I think like those classes are going to be part of like my full-time program, and I'm still just taking intro courses right now. So, but I want to do like, I want to like start early and like learn all those things before the classes start, because with like programs like this, they go so fast. So
yeah,
ahead will help.
And definitely the thing that I learned most about like learning coding is go to like the online videos of like like Khan Academy,
yeah,
and like other like YouTube channels like that that are solely meant to teach you these things that professors don't always do the best job in teaching you. And like for our studio, I didn't learn from a professor. I learned that from a TA. And so she only knows like what's written on the paper. And so if like they ask you a question, like to make a graph of this data, and you make the graph of the data in the way that makes sense to you, but you code it in a different, it gives you like the same result, but it like you code it in a different way than the answers tell you, but you run into a problem. But like what you're doing makes sense. She can't help you to fix it because that's not the answer that she has. And so working with the people that were like in my group and stuff for our group projects definitely helped me out with that. Shout out to Abby and Chris. They were the best. But yeah, coding is not fun, and I'm really glad that I'm not a computer science major. That's really not like a thing for me.
Yeah, I struggle with it too. I'm not a huge fan of programming, but I know it's useful to know. So I mean, I have to learn it anyways, but I also, like, I do want to learn it. It's just really hard. I was never, like, good with numbers or math, but I can be if I, like, put in extra time. And, yeah, I'm just going to have to start early, I guess. I've been using my knock-knock pad and, like, I don't know. I'm not super good with, like, staying organized with it just because, like, I get lazy about writing stuff down. But I'm going to try to actually use it all semester and, like, follow it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do the best when I write things. I have to write things down. I have to make lists for myself. That's like one of my favorite things to do is make myself lists. Doesn't mean I always follow the list, but I have like the list of things that I need to do. And like this was my to-do list yesterday. I have everything. I don't know where. I think I learned this from like a bullet journal post of some kind. I can't do bullet journals because it takes too much time. Like it would take me literally years to do a bullet journal for like 3 months to be able to like draw everything out, and like I don't have the time for that. So instead I get like those pre-made planners. My planner is a Lilly Pulitzer planner. And I took these like oversized note cards and I like cut them in half and I use them as my lists. So I put little dashes I do dashes. Some people do like the bullet points. And I write down whatever I need to do in all of those dashes. And then if I do it, then I check it off in a different color. If I don't do it, I circle it. And then if it's something that like is being moved to like a future list, I'll like put an arrow through it, through like the dash. If it's something that doesn't need to happen anymore at all, then I cross out the whole line, the dash and the words after the line. And that has definitely helped me in being aware of the things that I'm putting off doing and procrastinating. Because then it's like, oh, I've written 5 to-do lists for the past like week, and every single time I have written this one thing that I just haven't done that needs to get done. And so that makes me aware that that's something that I need to do first on my next list, you know? That's mm-hmm. definitely, that's what helps me stay productive and stay like motivated to do things, because I'm also someone who likes to check things off. I love checking things off my to-do list. Sometimes my mom always makes fun of me for this. Sometimes if I go do something that wasn't on my to-do list, I'll come back
and write on your to-do list.
And write it on my to-do list.
I do that too. I do that too.
It's just, I love checking things off. Yeah.
I'm just
so I do that. That's how I think that's the easiest way that I find, like, can stay on top of things is like planners and to-do lists and having things out on your desk that are for that. Like, keep your desk. I keep my desk really clean. I don't like a lot of things on my desk, but the things that I keep on the surface of my desk are sticky notes, those like little cut up flashcard things that I use to write my lists, and my planner and pens. So that if there's anything that I ever need to write down, there's a pen and a piece of paper like right away so I can remember to do it instead of trying to keep it in my head and remembering to do it again later, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I also, like, I can't focus if there's, like, a bunch of stuff on my desk. So I keep it, like, as empty as possible. And then I have, like, a huge lamp on my desk that the color of the lamp helps me stay motivated, too. I'm kind of weird. I really like yellow lamps because they make me feel, like, warm and cozy. So okay. If I'm in that mood of, like, studying, like, when it's raining outside or if it's, like, nighttime or something, I really like yellow lamps. So I have a yellow lamp, like, on my desk. But that helps. Like, I don't know. I don't know what it is, but it makes me feel like doing homework.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm weird, but.
The other, like, the thing that I started using last spring, this isn't really as much a motivated thing as it is like a fun school thing. For Christmas in 2019, for Christmas, my parents got me an Apple Pencil. I fucking love that thing so much, because what I did is I would take my iPad to class with me with my Apple Pencil. And I could write all of my notes on my iPad instead of having to carry around, like, all of my classes last year were, like, right after each other. I had all 4 of my classes right after each other. So I would have to carry around 4 folders and 4 notebooks. And so, like, having my iPad with me and that Apple Pencil instead of all of those folders and notebooks made, like, such a big difference. And it just made me excited to take notes and like look over my notes again later, because then you can go back and you can like highlight it. And one of the things you can also, like, there are certain apps that you can turn your handwriting, if it's neat enough, you can turn your handwriting into like typed words. Like, the app will do it by itself. I don't have good enough handwriting for that, so it never works for me. But that's also super nice. And the other thing that I got for Christmas this year that I'm super excited about is the Rocket Book. Have I told you about this?
No.
Oh my god. It is amazing. It's similar to like the iPad and Apple Pencil thing, But basically, it's a notebook, and you like you write on it like normal, but you have a special pen. You use the pen that is the pen that they gave you, and at the like at the beginning of the notebook, it has these items. It's like an arrow, a diamond, an apple, a bell, a clover, a star, and a horseshoe. And so, like, for the notebook, you write down, like, what each thing is. So, like, I would write experimental design in marine ecology. And then I would write, like, oceanography and, like, all of the other classes that I'm taking. Each one gets, like, an icon. And at the bottom of each page, it has those icons. And so you would just X over at the bottom which one you're taking notes for. And when you scan the little QR code and, like, the page, you scan the page and the QR code, and it will notice which X, like, which icon your X is over, and it will automatically sort your notes for you. And then you go in with this, like, cloth thing that it comes with. It's, like, a microfiber cloth, and it'll just, like, you get it wet, and you'll just, like, take it over your whole page, and it will just erase the whole thing. And so then you can use it again, and it uploads the notes to, like, your iPad or Google Drive or, like, any other, like, apps that you have that are, like, compatible with it. So it's, like, a reusable notebook.
I've never heard of this. Wait, can I see up close, like, what the page looks like? Is it, like, yeah. paper?
It's, like, I don't know how to explain it. It doesn't feel like paper. It's not really paper. It's, like, it kind of feels like a vinyl thing. It's, so, like, the pages themselves are like little dots. I don't know if you can see them. They're not
yeah,
like
lines. Yeah, I can kind of see it.
It kind of looks vaguely like graph paper, but with dots instead.
Yeah.
So, like, you have, like, lines that you can, like, write on to keep, like, you can see from the pages that I've written on, like, to keep it, like, linear. But, like, it doesn't block you. Like, you can still follow the linear lines with the graph, and it's not, like, a set width of the lines in the paper like a normal notebook. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Interesting.
I love it. It's amazing. I can't wait to use it. Because there are some classes too that, like, even though like using an Apple Pencil and an iPad, you're still actually, like, writing out the notes. And it's, like, it's been scientifically proven that students learn better when they physically write out the notes instead of typing your notes. Mm-hmm. So there are certain teachers that require you to write out your notes, and there are certain teachers that have a, or professors of mine that have a no technology rule. So I can't use my iPad in those classes. And so this does the same thing as my iPad, but it allows me to, like, my experimental design in marine ecology is one of those classes that I can't use technology. And one of the things he just sent out in our email was, he's like, you're going to need the first thing on our first day of class, what you're going to need is a notebook, a pencil, and a phone, because you're going to need to take pictures of your notes, because everybody's doing it online the first week while we all get, like, COVID tested and stuff, to take pictures of your notes to then upload them to our, to Canvas, which is, like, our student system. And this will do the same thing. So I can take that picture and I can upload it to Canvas, but then I can also just upload it straight to my note-taking app and I won't have to worry about it. And it's amazing. So, like, getting stuff like the Rocket Book and, like, an Apple Pencil and stuff that gets you excited to take mm-hmm. notes is something that will definitely help your motivation in school.
Yeah. I got the new iPad and an Apple Pencil over the summer, so I've been, like, using it to draw, and then I was like, I should try to get into, like, note-taking with, like, one of those note-taking apps. So I got Notability because I heard really good things about it, and you said you use it.
Yeah, I do.
And I like it so far because, like, you can change the width of the lines, you can change the, you know, like, pen size and stuff like mm-hmm. that. And also, I know there's, like, a feature where you can, like, record, like, lectures and stuff, and, like, slow down the speed and then write. So I feel like those are all good things. But I
the
also...
Other, One of my favorite things about Notability is that once you write things, you can go back through and you can like circle the notes and like change the size of like whatever line specifically. Like, say you wrote a line too big, you can go back and like circle it and then like change it with your fingers to make it like the same size. I love that.
And it also like straightens out, like when you underline something or you highlight something, you can straighten it out. I like that too. I did really miss paper though, like when I was using it. But I want to use both because I feel like there's definitely like things that I like about writing it on my iPad versus paper, but there's also stuff that I like about writing it on paper. So I'm just gonna try to use both.
Why, like, my word of advice to people who like don't take notes super well or like aren't really good at taking notes or don't take much time or care into taking their notes while they're in class. When I was in organic chemistry, my professor wrote everything on the board really fast and he never took any questions and he always just like lectured on the blackboard the entire time. So what I did is I would like literally write down all of the like molecules and stuff that he would write on the board, and after class I would go, I had a special organic chemistry notebook that had like the lines were hexagons, so you could like actually go in and like write the organic chemistry molecules with the correct degrees and all of that stuff. And I would go back in afterwards and I would color code and rewrite those notes every day in like easy to read, like legible handwriting that was all color coded, and it made it so that I could organic chemistry is a really hard course, and so it made it so that I could understand what I was writing, and like it made it so much easier to study. I did the same thing with biochemistry and that also helped. And so like my word of advice is like even if you write really good notes, the easiest way to study, I learned this from my favorite high school teacher, my freshman year of high school, is to copy your notes and then close your notebook and write down everything that you know, that you remember from whatever subject it is you're learning. And then look back and compare what you remembered and what your notes were and see what you missed and make sure to study up what you missed and do the same thing and like close your notebook again and write down everything you know again. And just do that until you know everything. That's the easiest way to do it or to teach someone else. Obviously that doesn't work for every subject, but like that is definitely the best way that I have learned to study and like do well on exams and stuff.
Yeah, I really like the method of teaching someone else something. Like I use that for like any of like my business courses and stuff. That really helped. And studying for tests, like for business, I would always start really early studying for tests, like marketing and stuff. So like I would have like definitions and stuff down earlier. So it was good for me to review like by like talking to other people about topics, if especially like if they haven't started studying yet, then that's like a way for me to remember like everything that I know by like talking about as much as I can. So but I want to try the writing method that you were talking about because I've never actually tried that. I've heard that it's good though.
It's my favorite way to study. It definitely, it like, obviously you can't do it with every subject. Like that wasn't really something that you could do with Orgo because organic chemistry is a lot about like patterns in molecules, and stuff like that. So that was the one where like making your notes easy and legible was the best way to do it. But like it's really good for like humanities courses. I was taught it by a history teacher and it works really well for history. It also works really well for English, and any foreign language it works really well for. The other thing that definitely helps me stay motivated is putting alarms on my phone. So like say I want to study for an hour. I will put a stopwatch on my phone and I will like put my phone across the room And so I'm only allowed, like, I have to study for until my timer goes off. And as soon as my timer goes off, then I can, like, have an hour to myself and, like, go on my phone or whatever. But I have to be productive for that hour. Or, like, setting an alarm as, like, a reminder instead of just putting a reminder in your phone or you're, like, getting a notification. Because those you can ignore really easily. But, like, setting an alarm to go off at a certain time, for some reason, I mean, it's different from other people, but, like, alarms for me is something that, like, I need to pay attention to, that I need to do. The moment that the alarm goes off and it's like, you need to do this now, my brain is like, oh my God, you need to do this now. So, like, that's when I end up doing it. It's only when I have an alarm set on my phone to do it. So, like, I always had alarms set, like, to get up in the morning, to leave for class, to study at a certain time, to, like, before any of my club meetings. I always have alarms set so I make sure that I don't forget to go to them. All of those things. It definitely, like, being a student is really stressful. You have so much stuff going on at the same time. So, like, finding what works for you, like, alarms work for me and planners work for me. But, like, that doesn't work for everybody. So, like, trying a bunch of different things and finding out what works for you is definitely the best way for you to be motivated. Because if you find, like, once you find something that works for you, you can just keep doing that, and that will keep you motivated. Normally, like, what you like, how you like to study doesn't change. Because if it works, then it works.
Yeah. I'm learning things, you know, that I can, like, try to do. I feel like I have different techniques for, like, different types of classes. Mainly I take business classes, so, like, how I study, like, I use Quizlet a lot, because there's a lot of definitions and there's a lot of, like, understanding, like, different, like, significances and things like that. So, like, Quizlet really helps. I really like getting my textbooks on Kindle if I can, because I like being able to, like, search up terms, or search up, like, certain parts of chapters. And also, I think there's, like, a way to, like, have flashcards in Kindle or something. Yeah, or maybe not all textbooks do that, but one of the textbooks that I got, it was, like, you can, like, the, like, online textbook will make the flashcards for you. So I want to try doing that, too. And then you can also, like, highlight and stuff in Kindle. And you don't have to carry around a textbook. So I feel like that's really helpful. I really like e-textbooks a lot. But it was, like, more expensive to do that. But I was like, I guess you get, like, other stuff. Yeah. Sometimes, okay, like, for regular books, it's, like, usually cheaper.
Well, like, for all of, I was looking into, like, getting my oceanography textbook online. And for a paperback version, it's, like, $200 or $150 to get the loose leaf. It's, like, $120. To get the online version, it's $44. And I'm like, why would anyone get a paperback version when you can get an online version? And if you highlight everything, like, normal, and you, like, what I would also do, like, in my, especially for biochemistry, I would, as I was reading, I would, like, have my notes up on, like, I would, like, have the ebook up on, like, my laptop or something, and I'd have my iPad out, or I did it with a notebook, but, like, I would have the ebook up on my iPad and have my notebook out next to me, and when I found something that I thought was really important that I thought that she would bring up in lecture, I would write it down in my notebook so that I would remember it, or if it was, like, a key term or anything like that. Because I feel like ebooks are so, first of all, they're so much better for the environment. Second of all, it's just, like, so much easier, especially when you're doing in-person classes, than lugging all of your textbooks around everywhere with you, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And you can, like, search up stuff easily. Mm-hmm. You just type it in the little search bar. I feel like sometimes e-textbooks are cheaper, but, like, this time, like, for one of my textbooks, the paperback version was, like, $15 new to rent. And the ebook was, like, $60.
Oh, my God.
To rent.
Oh, my God.
And, like, $80 to buy. I was like, what?
That's insane.
Yeah. But sometimes it's like a lot cheaper to get it on Kindle. So it just depends. I don't know. I also had to buy like a PDF version of like an article, and I was like, this is like $10. What the heck?
I don't know if it's the same with your school, but Northeastern has like student access to like all of the major newspapers and stuff for like news articles. And we also have like access to like JSTOR and like all of those other things. But within the scientific community, not all scientists allow their papers to be like set up like that, where it's free access. Sometimes you have to pay extra. And there's this website that one of my friends showed me where scientists like upload their papers to this website. And you can message them on this website and be like, "Hey, I'm doing like a paper on this," or, "Hey, I'm a student and I'm looking for some research on this. Like, would you mind sending me your article?" Because normally scientists are like, "Oh my God, yes, read my research." And they don't care. They don't do it for the money like that. Like, they're not the ones that get the money from that. It's like the companies that are selling it that get the money from that. So typically scientists are like, "Oh my God, yes. Like, I'll give it to you for free." And they'll like email it to you or message you back or whatever. Obviously sometimes scientists are like, "No, I'm sorry, I can't give it to you for free. Like, you have to buy the version." And like then you know, then that's fine. But the I think it's called ResearchGate.
Yeah, I've heard of it. I didn't know that you could do that.
What my friend who showed that website to me, that's what she was doing. That's how she got all of her articles for like one of our research papers that we were doing, was that way. But definitely having a desk outside of your room. I don't know if I think we kind of like touched on it a little bit earlier, but like having a separate workspace and a separate sleep space will help you with your it's very similar to like when you get up and go to work or get up and go to class. If you took class in your bed, you're not going to be as motivated as you are if you have to get up and out of bed. So setting those boundaries for yourself, which is why like I'll set two alarms. I'll be like, "Okay, I'm waking up at like 7, but I have to get out of bed at 7:30." So I'll set two alarms, to make sure that I'm out of bed and like make it to my desk by a certain time. And having that clean desk, but like having those separate workspaces also helps you with your oh my God, what's it called? Your like internal clock. Like some people have experienced like insomnia like while working from home if their desk is in their same room as their bed, because then they like when they're in bed, they don't feel like it's entirely their time to be able to sleep because they still see their desk and they think like, "Oh my God, there are so many other things that I have to do," and so it makes it harder for them to
Oh,
sleep. Does that make sense?
interesting. I'm the opposite because I can't sit at my desk in my room. I love my desk in my room, but if I do that, then I feel like I have to go watch TV or something. But towards the end of the semester, I was like, okay, it doesn't matter. But yeah, I know I need to, and like this class is only from January to March. So I don't think I'm gonna experience like that drained feeling that I normally do with like a full length semester because it's shorter. So I'm gonna see how well I can do with like following all of these things the entire like class, you know?
There any other tips that I have? Oh, what my planner does is they have a goals section, and so it's like in like your goals section, you write down like my goal for this year. By the end of the year, I want to I don't know, have completed my study abroad program, which like I'm gonna do by the end of the year. So like that would be something that I would put in my goals program, my goals list, to write down. I also, it comes with stickers too.
Oh yeah, mine does too. I have a Kate Spade planner, so it's kind of similar. It has all these extra things and like cute quotes and stuff.
Yeah.
I love Kate
I
Spade.
me too. I keep all of my planners too. I kind of think of them as like journals. You
Yeah.
know? Like I don't like write down how I feel every day
Can you
in
imagine?
my planner, but like I want to be able to keep track of all of this stuff like in the future.
I anyways keep like old planners and like notebooks and stuff, so now I can actually tell myself I have a reason to.
One day, someone will find it really cool, the stuff that I did. You know? Even if I'm not famous, which I don't plan on ever being famous, but like having this stuff like written down, I think is like someone will find it really cool. And everything, if you can tell, Sonia, is color coded.
Yeah, I do the same. And I also
So
cross it out when the day's done. The Kate Spade planners are the same size as your Lilly Pulitzer one, and they have like different designs you can choose from. Those are my favorite planners. And then Rifle Paper Company also has them, but the pages are a lot thinner, I've noticed.
okay.
So I like those planners, like design-wise, they're very nice, but I like the Kate Spade planner more because of the thickness of the paper.
Yeah, my nervousness with thin paper planners is that I use like felt tip pens and those
And it
leak
bleeds
through.
through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're the same.
This is like I put so much time and effort into my planner because it's something that I literally like live by. Like I can't survive life without a planner. The past like 3 weeks of me not having a planner means that I haven't gotten anything done.
Should we go on to our favorites now?
Yeah. Unless you do you have any other last tips about staying motivated?
Not really, and my favorite has to do with this.
Okay, let's do favorites. You go first.
Literally, it's just that I cleaned my room and I've started organizing the room that I used to study in, and it's very satisfying to like. So like that room is like built really nicely. It's like a guest room and it's really small, but it has a huge closet. So I use that for like all my like Indian clothing. And it has like built-in bookshelves and like a window seat. It's super,
Oh
super
my
pretty.
God.
Yeah. And but I also like I would put like all like my old notebooks and stuff in there. So it got kind of cluttered. So last night I started like fully cleaning it and I want to use it and for like just school stuff now. Because it has the potential to look really nice.
Yeah.
And I want it to look really nice because there's like a window seat and it's a pretty room. And my room, like my bedroom, I've been cleaning it and it makes me feel better when there's like no clutter. So that was my favorite from the week.
One of my favorites is setting up my desk. I'm really proud of myself for doing that by myself and with only like one arm. So obviously, like lately, there has been a lot going on politically, in our country. And I don't like to read the news, and I don't like to watch the news. I find it really depressing and really sad, and it's usually a lot of political jargon that I don't want to like, that I don't know enough to pay attention to. But I listen to a podcast that's like a political podcast called Pod Save America. And it's written, or it's like, I mean, I guess it is kind of written, but like it's the guys who do it are former Obama staffers. And they created like this media group and they have like a bunch of different podcasts and they work to like make media like accessible and like give true news to people in podcast form. So and they post like a couple 2 or 3 times a week and I am obsessed with their podcast. I like wholeheartedly obsessed. I listened to like all of their most recent episodes. The problem with like political episodes though is that stuff that they said 2 weeks ago really doesn't matter now. you know? So like you have to listen to like the day or the day after that it comes out. And so I haven't listened to like a lot of their like really old stuff, but I've listened to a lot of their new stuff, and it's so good. And it's so good. And I've been watching so many YouTube videos of like Barack Obama and Michelle Obama because like I love them. I like we grew up with him as our president and her as our first lady, and so like I just have a special place in my heart for them. And so I've been watching a lot of like YouTube videos of like them being interviewed by like Stephen Colbert or like Jimmy Kimmel or Jimmy Fallon or like Seth Meyers, all of those things. And they what popped up in like my what popped up in my like what to watch next was an interview or a speech given by Jon Favreau, who's was Obama's speechwriter for almost his entire time at the White House and his entire time on the 2016 or 2008 campaign for president. He did he like spoke about what it was like to be his speechwriter and like did like a Q&A and stuff at like a school that was I think it was at like Oxford or something, and it was recorded and posted to YouTube, and it was like an hour long. And Jon Favreau is one of the hosts of Pod Save America. And so I like saw his face and heard his voice at the same time. I had never seen a picture of his face before, but like listening to his voice, I was just like, oh my God, this is the voice that I listen to like 2 or 3 times a week for like an hour and a half. And so it was just like really trippy for me to listen to and like watch at the same time. So yeah, that's my favorite.
Maybe I'll listen to that podcast. I feel like I don't have time to listen to podcasts anymore, but I want to make time to listen to them. So maybe I'll try that one.
When I listen to podcasts and like when I listen to podcasts during the day, I listen to it like as soon as I get up. Like when my get up alarm goes off, I'll like put on a podcast. Normally now I get up at a reasonable human time instead of 4:30 in the morning. At 6 a.m. Eastern time, the New York Times releases their daily podcast. So I know that that is up every day. So I'll like put that on. And it like having someone talk to you about something that's like actually important forces your brain to like wake up. And so I like to listen to that. And then as soon as that's done, because that's only like 20 minutes, half an hour, I will listen to Pod Save America or like any of the other. They have another podcast called Pod Save the World that I listen to, which is about like international affairs and stuff. And they have like several other ones, but those are the two that I listen to. Yeah, that's the easiest way that I found time to listen to podcasts. And
That's a good idea.
it has definitely helped like my anxiety too, like listening to podcasts and like listening to like the same people talk, and especially having the same people. Like I am a Democrat. I'm a very proud Democrat. My mom is a Democrat. She raised me and my brother to be Democrats. But I like hearing like grown men who have been in the White House before and like aren't like old white men. These guys are in like their 30s. Talk about how like what politics should be like versus what our current Republican Party is making them be like is so refreshing, and it's something that I like love to hear, and it makes me feel better that like the world has like hearing their analysis of what the what politics are for as people who worked in the White House and like were the head of politics. It like makes me feel better about society. You know, it like relaxes me a little bit. Especially with such like the politically charged times that it is. That we are in. Also, one of my favorites, my brother got his wisdom teeth out today. And so he came home and he was high as a kite. So that was like, I got really great joy in like you know when you talk to someone who like just got their wisdom teeth out, for example, and is still high on drugs. And you're like talking to them, and what they're saying isn't making complete sense. That was fun. That was my favorite today. My mom showed me this video of these brothers who took their younger sister to go get her wisdom teeth out. And so she got her wisdom teeth out and she was coming home, and they made this big elaborate plan. And they basically had like, they put like you know how there's like an alert system and like all of the radios and cars and like phones and everything in the US. They made like a fake alert system sound, that was saying like the CDC is, like asking everyone to shelter in place, because of a virus that is spreading due to, that causes symptoms such as, they listed like five things, and like the last thing was cannibalism, and they're zombies. They're talking about, they made their sister right. believe that they were in the middle of a zombie apocalypse.
Oh my gosh.
So they went home, they like put down all of the back seats in the car. They were getting like rakes and like shovels, and the sister, who's like still very high, is like, why do you have a garden hoe? Shouldn't you be getting a gun? We're in a zombie apocalypse.
Oh my gosh.
And then
that'd be so scary.
One of the things he asked her, he was like, mom said we can only bring one pet. Do we bring the cat or the dog? And she was like, the cat, you idiot.
That'd be so scary.
And I was just like, oh my God.
Oh my God.
It's so funny. Well, this has been Salty Much with Sam and Sonia. I'm Sam.
I'm Sonia.
And we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.